All right, here we go. Hey, welcome to You Never Know Who You're Inspiring Pop.
This is like that stupid commercial there.
It is.
Liberty Mutual.
I'm going to get it this time. You ready?
Liberty Bibbity.
Welcome to You Never Know Who You're Inspiring Podcast with Paul Napoli and Tim Ellis. This week on the show, we have our friend Tom Sparks. Now, Tom, his background is he's a native of Syracuse, New York, and has moved to Minneapolis 13 years ago. And he's raising his family in Minneapolis in the district that George Floyd was murdered in. So we're going to talk to him about how this has affected him personally, how it's affected his family, and how what they're doing to get involved and help out in the community. So stick around. That's a conversation you're not going to want to miss. Also, later on in the show, we are talking to the Ferenczi family. May 15th to June 15th is National Tourette Syndrome Awareness Month. So they're going to fill us in a little bit on Tourette's. What it is, what exactly Tourette syndrome is, and help us learn a little more about that. So stick around, and here we go.
Yeah, you know, I as you guys are all aware, I'm a transplant to the city of Minneapolis. I've been here for 13 years. I came out here on a temporary assignment. And I met my wife out here, and the old joke goes that you got to watch out for those Minnesotan women because they're gonna keep you trapped here. But I think there's a lot of guys in a lot of places that are in that same boat. You know, Minneapolis is an amazing city. I've loved it my entire time here. I always tell people that it is it's got all the amenities of a big city, but it has a small town vibe. I would say in the city of Minneapolis, there's probably around 400,000 people. Clearly, when you expand out into St. Paul and on all of the surrounding suburbs that make up the Twin Cities, it's well over a million people. I won't give you any specific numbers because they'd all be wrong. You know, as you alluded to, I live in a little area called Hiawatha, Longfellow neighborhood. We are in the third police precinct, which is the precinct where George Floyd was murdered 2 weeks ago today.
Wow.
So a little bit about Hiawatha, right? It's my direct neighborhood. Have these conversations all the time about our desire to want to raise our children right here in the city. It's a beautiful city because of the diversity, right? But when you get right down to it, our little pocket of this neighborhood is about as monolithic a demographic as you can get. I mean, it's incredibly white. It's certainly liberal leaning. But you know, a lot of the things that, you know, I certainly want to ensure that I'm exposing my kids to, it's kind of like, you know, living out in the burbs sometimes. So let's see. You know, so 2 weeks ago, my wife and I, we were up in Aiken, which is about 2 hours north of the city. We were doing a little distance camping trip with my wife's parents. Got a little blurb on my phone that there was some type of a police involved death down in the cities. And you know, it didn't really hit me, right? You know, we were able to come back down in the city on Tuesday. That was the planned day we were coming back. And it probably was not until Tuesday night that I finally you know, continue to see this thing start to bubble. Watch the video, and I'll tell you, it changed me. Something happened to me watching that video, and then everything that's transpired since. That I am an absolutely a different human being than I was 2 weeks ago.
Well, that's a huge statement. I think a lot of us have that same feeling. We last week we talked to Carlos Tierney, and Paul and I both talked about our wow moments. And this video, I think, was America's wow moment. It truly has really visualized what has been a problem for a long time. And I guess, right there in front of us, a lot of times, like one of the things that Paul and I talked about before last week was, is there something we're missing? What are we blind to? How could we not see this kind of stuff coming or happening and I know it, I work with the police. Yep. I know, I can't tell you how many great, amazing police officers I deal with every single day. But this issue is widespread. And, it's unfortunate that it's happened in your community. And I know that let's go right into that. So you find out you're camping, you said, and you find out through through your phone.
Yeah.
So when you return home, what's it like?
So, we return home and I'll throw this term out there. I've been using it a lot, quite a bit. Based on the color of our skin, we've got an incredible amount of white privilege, right? I mean, I was able to turn this on and get myself involved in it, but then I was also able to very easily turn it back off and almost forget like it was even happening. I mean, he was murdered about a mile from my house. The third precinct itself is about a mile and a half due north of the house. And, I'll be completely honest with you. It probably wasn't until you saw the reaction that, this really became something that was important for me. Minneapolis, I said it at the beginning, it's an amazing, it's on a lot of top 10 lists, as far as, education, as far as, income, as far as, just quality of life. It's in the top 10 everywhere if you're white. Mm-hmm. But when you flip it and you look at people of color, and we also have a really significant indigenous population here as well. And so they're pretty much right in the same boat. We are one of the top three absolute worst places in the country when it comes to education, income equality, all of those same things for people of color. Wow. So I talk about, my neighborhood is completely white. We all talk, about the importance of racial equality and all these things, right? Living in a pretty progressive city. But it doesn't really mean much to a lot of us. It certainly didn't, it didn't mean a lot to me. I mean, certainly I've been on a kind of a racial discovery journey for several years. I mean, unfortunately, this is not the first, killing of a black man at the hands of law enforcement in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
There's a long rap sheet there. And so, I've been kind of on that journey, but it's been something I can turn on, I can turn off when it gets a little uncomfortable. Maybe I'll throw a post out there on Facebook. I'll get a little pushback and then I'll ease off.
Yeah.
I'm done being on the sidelines. I've been out there in my community. I'm committed to continuing to educate myself on the disparities between whites and people of color. And
it's a lot of my,
go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, So, you know, I feel like a lot of us are on this same journey with you right now. And I don't know if it's my age. I don't know what it is exactly. If I'm having these epiphanies, I'm seeing things a little bit differently and, you know, learning along the way, like everything you just mentioned. And it's when I even just, you know, so you scroll Facebook, you know, the people who you're friends with or who you see, it's funny. Like we all, not all, but a lot of us look at Facebook and we're all looking at different things on Facebook. So I have however many friends, you have however many friends. I see different things on my feed than you'll see on your feed, sure. But somehow we're still all like connected because of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I've been seeing very similar to the feeling that I have, the feeling that you're describing. I know Tim, the way that you've been with, handling this and thinking about this. And I see a lot of it. I see a lot of people having these, oh, that's what this means. Oh, I get this a lot better now than I did. So as far as like anything positive coming out of this, I would say that is a big step. But like you just said, is now it's time to stay off the sidelines and to continue to push to try to help be the difference. And I love that. With everything you guys got going on and right there, like ground zero right there. What's the energy? What's the feel right now?
You know, so just to describe how the protests evolved. So George Floyd died on a Monday. Tuesday, I think everybody was just kind of disillusioned, right? You know, people were trying to figure out what the heck just happened there. A lot of these other, you know, shootings, they tend to happen in the heat of the moment, right? I've got some preconceived notions. I see a threat that's not really there. I pull the trigger too soon before I actually knew there was a threat there, and there wasn't a threat there, right? This one was so much different because you had a police officer who knelt on his neck for you know, 8 minutes and 46 seconds, including almost 3 minutes after he had already lost consciousness, while you saw three other law enforcement, you know, basically just holding the perimeter, right? Any one of them could have stepped in at any given point. When I first saw the video, I couldn't believe, I pictured this happening in a dark corner in the middle of the night, you know, and it was broad daylight on Chicago and 38th, which is, you know, you saw cars driving in the background. I mean, this was just like, are you kidding me?
And there was no threat.
There was absolutely no threat. I mean, there was, I mean, when you piece it all together, there was never a threat.
Right.
I
mean, he was in custody. He was in handcuffs.
He was already in handcuffs. That's the thing. Yeah. You nailed it, man. Like when we see or hear about it in a different light where it is for lack of a better term, bang, and like, you're, you know, feeling for your life and like you make a decision. But like you said, and it took, and I'm imagining a lot of people are with me here. It took a lot before I could actually watch the video. And when I finally did, I was angry and I was almost mad at myself for watching because I was like disgusted, but it was exactly that. It was 10 minutes of the knee on the side of the neck, wherever. But it was 10 minutes of him begging for his life in a way. I mean, begging for his life, not in a way. He was begging for his life.
He was, yeah.
And that, I think that's what struck with a lot of us, with a lot of the country, was exactly what you just said. It wasn't just like, this happened and it happened quick. No, like for 10 minutes, this guy begged you. Yeah. So that's a big difference. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah. So, you know, that, so then, you know, Tuesday, you know, I think there was a protest on Tuesday, pretty docile. I mean, I a lot of anger, right? I mean, you can understand how there could be so much anger. I mean, this is something that happened right here and it's inflamed me, but we've got people that have been dealing with this for not only their lives, but generation over generation, right? Wednesday things got, you know, pretty heated, but I remember, you know, working, you know, I was talking with my wife and, you know, our three kids, and we thought, you know what, you know, schooling, we're not doing schooling on Thursday. we're going to make signs, we're going to go protest, and this is going to be our schooling. Our kids are going to get some applied, you know, racial justice. This is how progress gets made. We made some chalk art in the front yard that the kids were able to model into signs. We made signs to go protest. And then Wednesday night, I mean, just things, you know, things got out of hand, right? Mm-hmm. There was quite a few structure fires down by the third precinct. The Target right there on the corner of Lake and Minnehaha was looted. The Cub Foods that was right there was looted. I certainly can't say that I condone any of that, but again, as a white human being, I can't, no matter how hard I try, understand the amount of anger that our you know, black brothers and sisters have, especially when there really is no proper way for them to protest, right? I mean, look at Colin Kaepernick and what the NFL has done to him. You look at you know, every other way of protesting to get people's attention. There isn't a good way, right? By definition, if you're protesting, if you're getting upset by that, you know, there's no such thing as a protest that's effective when everyone's like, yeah, this is great, this is happy. If it's bothering you, then you have at least something that you need to be learning from it. So, you know, Thursday we're like, all right, not an environment that I want to take my kids to, but I had heard some neighbors were going down. We're gonna go clean up, right? I want to show support for these people that are out there protesting. I want to show support for my community. I want to show support for the small business owners. So I was out there just shoveling glass in just sopping wet. Because if you can imagine, buildings were either charred or they were soaked because they wouldn't turn the fire suppression systems off. Because, you know, fires would continue to go up. I had so much glass dust in my hands and in my feet, you know, that they started to swell. But I'll tell you what, it was almost a spiritual experience getting down there with the community. I had people coming up and thanking me for doing what I was doing. It just felt like such an honor to be able to, you know, serve the community in that way. But as I left,
I just got to stop right here and tell you how I'm in tears right now. That right there, just that's what it needs to be about. It needs to be about people like you, Tom, stepping up and realizing that, you know what, it's going to take us all. It's going to take every one of us. And you didn't know what to do or where to go, so you just went. And then you're shoveling in the streets. You know what? So thank you. And I've always appreciated you. You know that. And I just think what a role model you are for your kids and what a role model you are for the rest of us and certainly for your community. Sorry to interrupt, but I had to get that out because or else I'm going to be a sloppy mess over here, dude. So continue on.
Well, as I left on Thursday afternoon, I could tell something was brewing, right? I had talked to some small business owners. Our favorite Indian restaurant, Gandhi Mahal, was one block off of where the third precinct was. The owner actually let me park my bike because I brought my bike down. He let me park my bike right in his restaurant. He had actually been out there feeding protesters, delivering them water. Just so many of these people were supporting the protest. But things started to get weird. Big trucks started rolling in. Big white dude. I mean, you just started to get a feel like, okay, there's some opportunists starting to come in. Mm-hmm. There's some outside agitators that are starting to come in and just kind of just try to jump in on a vulnerable city in a vulnerable situation and try to change the narrative.
And they did. They absolutely changed it.
Absolutely changed. And it suddenly became, you know, every one of these small businesses that was protected on Wednesday night with, you know, these signs of support. It's almost like the places that had the signs of support were the ones that were targeted the next night and looted and trashed. And it was basically Thursday, Friday night were just, I mean, it was a war zone. Mm-hmm. I woke up Friday morning and the wind was blowing just right. There was ash in my yard. There was just smoke everywhere. Helicopters rolling around. The National Guard hadn't really gotten in there yet. But that was probably the lowest of the low.
How do you explain all this to your children?
Like, it's tough, man. I'll tell you, my kids have gotten more exposure and have had more discussions about race in a week than I had all the way through college, right? Yeah. I tell my wife with COVID, with all of this that's going on, you know, this our kids' generation in particular, like kids in this area, they're going to be resilient as all get out, right? I mean,
yeah.
And they've been troopers, right? I mean, they recognize stuff is going on. We're having frank discussions about the fact that you know, law enforcement, there's a lot of great people in law enforcement. But there's a lot there that, hey, no one, when you're white, without a doubt, you don't question that law enforcement has your back, that they're there to protect you. That same narrative isn't there for people of color. Yeah. And we've also had discussions that, hey, you know, this is far bigger than police brutality. There is an entire history in this nation that has been whitewashed that none of us have learned in school. And it's true. My wife and I looked at each other. We watched a documentary last night and I said, I had no idea who Malcolm X was. I always thought he was some kind of crazy radical. And, you know, he definitely went at things different than MLK did, but it's like, I didn't learn any of that in school. And so that's been my journey now, is I need to get out there. I need to consume black media. I need to get unfiltered, unbiased history of why we have the systemic racism in our nation today. I mean, it goes back 400 plus years.
Yeah. Like I said earlier, when we were kind of talking about that, you're not alone. And I feel like a lot of the country is, I'm going to say finally, but we're kind of finally doing the same thing. With that, just out of curiosity. So like, obviously, so your crew, like your, I don't know about your whole family or whatnot, but you live there, your friends, you said your neighbors were going down. So you went down. Do you feel that similar feeling amongst your friends? Are they also like,
oh, yeah,
wow, like I need to learn more than what I know? Or is it kind of the,
yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, actually starting tomorrow, I got a group of six of us guys that we're all in this boat where we said, you know what, the dust is going to settle and life is going to get back to normal. It's starting to get back to normal now. But our city, you know, more importantly, George Floyd and so many others will have died in vain, and our city will have gone up in flames in vain if we let that status quo to continue to go forward. So we've all kind of committed that, hey, you know, this isn't a black problem. This isn't a minority problem. This is a problem that affects all of us. And, you know, especially I look at myself, you know, it's on white men to get off the sidelines and stop turning a blind eye and being a part of the change. And in this area, it to me, it feels pretty universal in this area. I mean, certainly I've had some conversations with pals out in the burbs, and you could just tell that it hasn't hit them the same way it has hit us. Right. I mean, right. We've all witnessed things on the news, and you know, when you experience it, it really is a different animal.
Spot on, man.
Obviously, like you said, just the other day, the wind was blowing just right, and there's ash in your yard. Yeah. How does it I don't want to, I mean, I see what I see on the news and such. How does it feel? Like when you go to your, you can't go to Target, right? Target, like everything's.
Well, they closed, like, I believe it was like 24 metro area Targets, after Lake Street went up. Right. And so those are now open. So, the Longfellow Hiawatha area is now considered a food desert. We've got a very high Latino population here. We've got a very high indigenous Native American population here. We've got a lot of people that are in need. And, I've also had the opportunity of trying to work with folks in the area that have been setting up some of these mobile, food donation places to really kind of help out. And in fact, we had my son's middle school had a food drive on last Sunday. Now they were hoping to get 85 food kits, basically just kits that had, soap, bread, rice, just enough to get like a family through for a week. We had one of our friends who lives out of the city. She wanted to help. She went to Costco. We pulled together $500. She bought a ton of stuff, and we put together 15 bags.
Wow.
The middle school is maybe 8 blocks from my house. It took me over 2 hours to drive there.
Wow.
Now, if you imagine Minneapolis is a big grid, every single avenue and every single street going into that school was just blocked with cars. And I ended up, it was beautiful. I Facebook lived it. I had tears running down my eyes. I mean, the way the community was stepping up, they ended up getting over 100,000 bags when they wanted to get 85.
Wow.
That's incredible. I
don't really know what they're saying about Minneapolis in the media. And, one of the things that I have learned here is that, every media channel, every media outlet, it's got a slant, it's got an agenda. And yep. We as Americans need to be very cautious about the news that we're consuming.
Spot on, Tommy.
That's a whole different discussion.
Oh, you're not kidding.
Yes, it is.
And we are going to have that someday, Paul.
Yes, yeah. We are.
You guys got to get somebody on that knows, knows a thing or two about that. I totally forgot where I was going with that.
Just how you guys were coming together, I think.
Oh,
is
yeah. It's yeah. Minneapolis.
Paul, did you ever hear that story?
I didn't know anything about that.
Tom, we haven't heard any of that until you just told us.
That's incredible.
That's what the media needs to be letting people know.
Yeah, yeah.
How can we help out? How can we get involved? That's what they should be reporting.
Yep. Minneapolis, even when I went down there on Thursday, during the day, I feel incredibly safe. Mm-hmm. The city is safe. It's not destroyed beyond repair, like people might be led to believe. I think it'd be a travesty if we allow big developers to come in and develop these pieces of property that were destroyed, that were homes of beautiful small businesses, minority-owned businesses, and we're doing what we can to make sure that does not happen.
Good.
It's amazing.
But the one other thing that is really interesting in all of this, that I think I'd be remiss not to touch on is, for about a week after the peak of the rioting and the protesting, the National Guard came in. They, for the first time in the state's history, they deployed every single National Guard here. There were Blackhawks circling every, 5 minutes around the house. It was actually pretty cool to see. They were working with their local DNR to do aerial fire suppression. So it was pretty cool to see the big booms of water and all that. But it became very weird because there was like a guerrilla warfare going on throughout the city. We had bad actors all over the place doing really crazy things. There's some super fringe groups that started to seek opportunities coming out of the anger throughout the nation. with wanting to open things up coming out of COVID. That had started to lose some steam, and they absolutely were coming in to our city. My wife and I had had direct interactions with some of these people, but they were doing things like they were parking cars with no plates, filled with accelerants, filled with bricks, filled with things, and just leaving them in certain areas by day, parking, you know, bottles of gasoline in bushes. And then they were going and they were just torching things by night. And so what had happened, we didn't have any police to protect us. Mm-hmm. The police was preoccupied unfairly trying to you know, keep these protesters in check, when in reality there was this guerrilla warfare thing going on throughout the city. And so throughout the entire city, our blocks stood up and created neighborhood watches. We now have an incredible network, an incredible bond. But the interesting thing that is the point I want to make is, as a white male, it very quickly got to a point where I felt like if I was walking, especially near dusk, out on the street by myself, then everybody was looking at me like I was that bad actor. Because I certainly fit the profile, right? I mean, my wife and I, we go on a walk every night. If I was with my wife, I was good. If I was by myself, it was like, who's this guy?
Yep.
And the reason why I make that point is because it wasn't until after the fact that someone made this point, but it really parallels. I felt very uncomfortable and almost a little bit scared in that scenario for maybe about a week. And for you know, black men in this country, that's how they got to feel almost every day. Tim, I know last week you had mentioned one of your coworkers that, you know, you guys used to run at 3 a.m.
Yeah.
And you asked him how his run went. Yeah. I can't do that by myself.
Right. Yeah.
And so it just hit home like, wow, these things that I just take for granted, being white, in this country. And it's just been eye opening for me.
How's your, what's next for your city? What's,
rebuilding.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of private donations are coming in to a lot of awesome organizations to do exactly that, help some of these small businesses rebuild. Mm-hmm. And then I would say a lot of these neighborhood watches, we're kind of flipping it to say, okay, the immediate threat is over. We're no longer staying up all night watching our blocks and whacking pots and pans and trying to make noise when, you know, somebody's, you know, coming through. Yeah. And, you know, and trust me, there were a lot of threats. But now we're really focused on, what can we do to educate ourselves to ensure this doesn't happen again? How can we make the Longfellow Hiawatha neighborhood actually a neighborhood that isn't just exclusively white, that it is a welcoming and accessible place for people of color? I think that's kind of that's the long-term play, and that's the hard part, right?
Right.
So,
wow, man, it sounds like you've personally grown from this quite a bit. I think a lot of us have, and, you know, just hearing your stories about just, you know, your neighborhood watch and everything that you guys are doing and what it felt like walking through the streets, that just, again, it's another aha moment for me to realize that, you know, I've heard the word white privilege my whole life, and I never put any thought to it.
Same.
But my eyes are open to it now, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Appreciate you sharing your story with us. I think a lot of people will learn from, you know, from this, from your story, from stories like this. I think a lot of people will learn from it. So I appreciate it very much. I know I learned from it.
Cool.
So Tom, I do have a couple questions for you from listeners that came in.
Yeah.
You might know this listener. How do you survive as a Yankee fan living in Twin Country?
Dude, not only does he got the Yankee hoodie on, but do you see the pennant up there in the background?
I see
it. On the wall? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we were talking about this before we started.
I love it.
It's awesome.
So, yeah, I mean, I I know a lot of people in Minneapolis are probably going to watch this. This is my 15th year, but you know, the Twins unfortunately have not been a threat, right? I mean, when it comes to the Yankees, so.
Very true.
I hear you. Oh, man. Tom, thank you so much. Appreciate everything you're doing, man. Keep me posted. How can, like, we follow you? What are you on? Facebook, Instagram? Where are you?
Yeah, I'm on Facebook. I'm trying to keep it positive on Facebook.
Love it.
I dabble on Instagram. I've gotten a little bit more active on those, just mainly from the standpoint of, you know, I want to start flooding my feeds with people that I want to learn more about.
Perfect. You know,
there's a lot of great people out there, a lot of great people of color. And, you know, my world's pretty white right now. So I need to darken it up a little bit.
Man, happy birthday to your wife, Kelly.
Thank you.
I know that happened this week. So wish her happy birthday from us. And I really appreciate you you coming on. Paul, you got anything else before?
Just a big thank you, man. Thanks a lot. Appreciate your time. Appreciate, you know, kind of letting us feel this through you and kind of feel and like imagine being right there. So I appreciate you letting us kind of live that journey through you right now. So thank you very much, man.
Keep up
the amazing stuff you're doing, Tom. It's truly awesome. And your kids and family, I'm sure, are very proud of everything you're doing. And I know how you are. So I know you have your whole family involved, and that's important too. You know, we got to teach our kids at a young age how to be involved in their community in a positive way. And you're doing that, man. You're being a leader. Oh, before I let you go though, dude, I got to tell you, Paul, I don't know if you knew this about Tom. I know you don't know this about Tom, but last year he rode across the state of Minnesota on a bike.
Mm-hmm. No, I did not know
we
that.
We tracked him. Your brother Sean and I tracked you all day long. How many miles was that?
It was 242 miles and it was all gravel.
Sounds horrible.
You know what? I actually just had this conversation the other day. I think that was mentally training myself for COVID and the civil rights movement, because I'll tell you, you learn a lot about yourself when you're on a saddle for 18 hours.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Wow. It's incredible. Wow.
It's fun.
Keep going, brother. Man, you're doing awesome stuff, Tom. It was great seeing you. Be safe. And thanks again for coming on, man.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
You bet. Yep.
Hey, guys, real quick. This podcast is called You Never Know Who You're Inspiring for a reason. And the reason is, it's not about Paul Napoli. It's not about Tim Ellis. It's about you. It's about your stories. It's about maybe somebody you know and their story. So if you want to get on this podcast, or you know somebody's whose story should be told and put on this podcast, we want to hear about it. Shoot us a direct message, Facebook us, Instagram, TikTok, whatever the case may be, and get a hold of us, and we'll get your story on our podcast. Now, we're moving on to the rest of this week's show, where we're talking about Tourette Awareness Month. So we have the Frenzy family on board, and enjoy that.
Yes. My name is Haley. I am 18 years old and was born and raised in North Central Wisconsin. I now currently reside in the northern parts of the state by a beautiful lake, and I have Tourette syndrome. I was diagnosed at the age of 8 after having an undiagnosed cough that was caused by Tourette's. I also suffered with many other motor and vocal tics. Many people have labeled Tourette's as a swearing condition. However, only 10% of people with Tourette's actually suffer with a swearing tic known as coprolalia. Each person with Tourette's suffers and experiences this condition differently. Tourette's affects you physically. Pain at times can be overwhelming from doing a repetitive motion over and over and over again. Some people even have self-injury tics like hitting themselves or others. Tourette's affects your schooling. The uncontrollable ticking can make it impossible to pay attention and follow what is going on in class. Tourette's affects you socially. People look and stare at you, wondering what is wrong, wondering why you can't just shut up or knock it off. Tourette's affects your job, leaving a barrier to employment or lack of focus at work causing you to take twice as long as others. Along with the uncontrollable tics come the comorbid conditions, OCD, ADHD, depression, anxiety, and the list goes on. I haven't told you this so you can pity me. No. I tell you this because we need to change society. We need to change the stigma around Tourette's syndrome. We need to tell the world that we are no different from other people. We all have our struggles, and this is mine. Tourette's Awareness Month is May 15th through June 15th. Spread the word and raise awareness for Tourette's syndrome by sharing this video with your friends. Let's end the stigma.
All right, it is National Tourette's Awareness Month, and so can you guys all hear me okay?
Yeah.
Did I unmute everybody? Yes, everybody's unmuted, I think. Perfect. All right. So for a lot of people don't really understand what Tourette's is, and I think that there is a lot of misconceptions about exactly what Tourette syndrome is. So just can you explain to me, and we'll start with Jillian, we'll start with you. Can you just explain the Tourette syndrome and just give us an idea of you know, what it is, what it, you know, how it is to live with it, and then we'll go from there.
So Tourette syndrome, it's a neurological disorder that affects the nervous system. You have both motor and vocal tics. You have to have both a motor and a vocal tic for a certain amount of time to be diagnosed with it. The vocal tics and the motor tics, they vary. They can be literally anything you can think of can be a tic. Living with it, I can't imagine not living with it. I wouldn't change having it at all. It's just what makes me myself. Oh, shush, David.
Gonna say that, David.
It's just a part of like who you are. It doesn't make me any different than you guys, except I make very weird noises and very weird faces. But you guys get over it, and you guys like me, so it's all right.
I don't like you, Jill, but I do love you.
Love you too, Paul.
So, the tics, right? We'll talk about, there's vocal tics and then motor tics. Vocal tics, I've done some research, can be sniffing, throat clearing, grunting, hooting, and shouting. And then the complex vocal tics, where words and phrases may or may not be recognizable, but consistently occur out of context. Does that happen often?
Not so much to me. A couple times I would hear something, and then later on, like a couple days later, I would have that tic. We've had Tourette's presentations where this kid would say, he would actually say, kill the principal. And then there was another one that said, there's a chicken in my pocket. So there, it can literally be any sentence, anything you can hear. I used to be a fire truck, so I was a very legit fire truck. I sounded exactly like one. I sounded exactly like a duck. If you've seen Jurassic Park, I sounded like a pterodactyl. Dylan sounds like Daffy Duck right now.
Yeah.
So we just pick up these noises and we just go with it.
So like, obviously I've known you guys, we've all been part of the same family here for a while. When you guys all first started training and stuff, I personally felt like I never really saw the tics. Like, I never could pick up on it for the longest time. Like, and I don't know if it's because now we've been together for so long that now I do see them sometimes and pick up on them. But like, you could do that right in the middle of class, and I would have thought I wouldn't have thought twice about it. I wouldn't have realized that was a tic or that you had Tourette's. David, you probably remember the one time in Auburn when we were sitting there waiting for the doctor, and the doctor kept coughing. And I'm like, oh my gosh, man, this doctor, he's got to do all this stuff and he doesn't stop coughing. And I'm telling you, David, I'm talking to you. I'm like, dude, you see this guy won't stop coughing. Only to like 20 minutes later realize, duh, this guy has Tourette's. Like, that's why he's doing what he's doing. So like for me personally, I knew it. Your family told me, your parents told me, I knew that, but I never really witnessed it. And you know, like I've only seen the videos of the fire truck, Jill, and I've seen a couple, you know, obviously if we're hanging out outside of the studio, I see a couple, but when we were in the studio, when you guys were training, rarely did I ever even notice them. Do you feel so? Okay. So let's say you're having a tick or whatnot. Do you feel like, do you like look around? Like, are people noticing? Like what, how does it make you feel? Does it make you wonder or care if anybody notices or anything like that? Like, how does it feel?
Not anymore.
Right.
No, I don't care.
I don't really care anymore. Good. They're going to look more of, they're going to look like more of a jerk staring at me than if they were just to go on with their life and ignore it all.
Right.
Yeah. So when you do have a tick, and again, there's vocal tics and then motor tics, which can be like eye blinking, facial grimacing, jaw movements, things like that. Do your tics ever relate to something that's going on like around you? Like, and
stress.
Yeah, David.
Stress.
Go ahead.
100%. Like anything that stresses me out, man, my tics are gonna be going nonstop all day long. Like, I mean, right now I don't do too many tics other than like sniff and like roll my eyes, stuff like that. But I used to like come home from school hooting like an owl or shaking my head bad, and I try to call my mom every time I got home. I had to call my mom, right? Let her know I was home. And I remember, like, she'd be, like, having the phone probably 10 feet away from her because I'd be screaming so loud on the phone. She couldn't put it up to her ear. And it just gave me crazy headaches. But
now. So, like,
go ahead.
I know for me, if I'm stressed, if I'm tired, if I'm excited, if I'm sick, any of those like emotions that you can get, my tics will increase and they'll get worse and they'll be more pronounced.
I remember, so you you kind of talked about it a little bit already, but I know when you were going away to the camp and whatnot, which are you still doing that?
I was going to this year, but because of COVID, it was canceled.
Crazy. That's what I thought. So when you go away to it's a Tourette's camp, right?
Yes.
And then I know when you come back, you either have new tics, more tics, and you kind of already talked about that and spoke about that. When you guys are hanging out and such, so like right now, you know, you got Jillian, David, Dylan, all three of you guys on this call looking at each other. Like, does that have the same type of effect to where you will pick up tics from each other? Does that make sense? You know what I mean?
Well, if
Chris is laughing, I'm gonna say that's a yes.
If Dylan and I are sitting next to each other, we bounce off each other. So last night we were on a Zoom call and I ticked and then Dylan ticked and I started ticking again, and then my dad had to get up out of the middle because he was sick of us, so he had to walk away.
Oh man, I lived that right there. I could see
that too. Oh man. So, speaking of tics, right? Like, do you have a favorite? Be honest with me.
Let's bring in mom. Chris. Chris, do you have a favorite?
A favorite tic of theirs?
Yeah.
I don't know if they're favorite. I guess we, over the years, we've had tics present that we kind of make a... we find the humor in them. It's
so do
like
you have like a when, most memorable one like
oh so David, his onset of Tourette's, he started, you know, with head shaking, and I was like, there's something up, and Jim wasn't quite sure, he didn't know if he believed me. But then when David hooted in the car for 4 hours like an owl from Erie, Pennsylvania, then we knew we were dealing with something. So that initial hooting was, you know, a really fun one.
At what point did you know you had, oh, when David was hooting for 4 hours on the way back from Pennsylvania?
Yes.
That's when Jim was like, all right, Chris.
Yeah, that's when he said, I think you might be onto something, honey. Call the doctor. So, and then David had it. He did. He had some terrible screaming tics at one point. Jillian had blood-curdling screaming tics at one point. But she also has internal tics more than the boys. So we've had ER visits with her where we think that she's having, you know, an appendicitis attack or something. And it ends up that she has just done a number on herself internally that it makes it made her muscles get all messed up or whatever. And she would, so we've done a couple of those trips before because of the tics, the motor tics don't necessarily have to be outward with like, you know, arm flapping or hitting yourself. It can also be like muscle contracting.
Wow. Dylan.
Yeah.
I just wanted to make sure you were still there.
Dylan, what about you? What's your most memorable tic?
Right now.
Right now. Like, I had a Chewbacca one, but that wasn't, like, nearly as bad as this.
So, curious, you know, Dylan being a teenager, and obviously David and Jillian, not too long ago, y'all were teenagers as well. Going through high school, going through junior high school, I would imagine that that would be stressful in that scenario. If you don't become comfortable with it right away, that it would be stressful. Did you feel like, or do you feel like you've had to explain yourself? What would you want? I guess this is like a multi-billion questions here, but one is, was it more stressful? Did you feel stressed out about, you know, I'm going to say being different, having, you know, these tics? And did you, do you feel like it changed who you were kind of throughout high school? Like, did it, what would you tell somebody going through this? Or what would you tell somebody who has no idea what tics are and what Tourette's is? Do you know what I'm saying?
I'd put it like, you know, that feeling you get when you have to sneeze and it doesn't go away. That's like what a tic is. It just, you have to do it. And then if they make fun of you in school, they make fun of you at school, but I don't really care what you think about me. So
I love that about you.
I love it.
That's your confidence.
That's right.
I think David was the one who, cause he pioneered this for us. He's the one that had, I think, the toughest time early on because we really didn't know what we were dealing with. So at that point, once we knew he had Tourette syndrome, he was in middle school, and it was a terrible, terrible time for him, which ended up why we ended up with him at Grimes. And I think he can speak to that. He can tell you of his experience there of having just a supportive peer group. Wouldn't you say, Dave, that kind of helped you bridge into accepting the whole Tourette's thing?
I think, the main thing that, like, you need to do is tell your friends, tell everyone. And,
get a tattoo.
Twitch, man. Like, in middle school, she's right. Like, I had a tough time. I had literally one friend. And, I mean, like, people would make fun of me, throw stuff in the lunch and stuff like that. And, I mean, he was a bigger kid then, too. So he was also being made fun of. But, like, I mean, we had each other's backs. And it wasn't until like seventh grade when I started like really standing up for myself and like telling people, like actually explaining it. Like, you could tell people all you want, like, I have Tourette's and like, yeah, whatever. But like, I mean, we actually explained it. I would go and educate people on it, tell them, like, I would even test them. Like, there's a test you can do and it'll show you how difficult it is to live with Tourette's. You have to write out the Pledge of Allegiance, and every time I clap my hands, you have to do a tick. I will bet you $1,000 right now, no one can complete the Pledge of Allegiance doing the test.
I don't think you know how much I need money right now, so try this.
Yeah, but educating people is key. I mean, and just like honestly, it confidence. Like, you have to have confidence because it's part of you. So you have to just accept it and live with it. I mean, that's why I have it on my back. I mean, it's me. Like Twitch, that's me. I try out. So I live with it. I do what I need to do. You know, I mean, I'm still successful with and having it. It's nothing different other than I make weird faces and I maybe make some. Sniffing all day long, make myself dizzy, but it bothers me more than it bothers you, to be honest.
Yeah. So, Chris, are there any support groups in the area for Tourette's? Did you find as a parent, you know?
Well, we didn't know at the time, but we found that there is a Tourette's syndrome support group that's out of Baldwinsville. They're part of the greater Western New York area. There's a couple of different groups that kind of network out of the Tourette syndrome of the TSA USA, which is actually out of Long Island. So after we started to network, we were able to find a support group. So we did go to a couple of support group meetings, but because we were in the early stages, you know, we really didn't have a lot of, we didn't know what direction to go. And it wasn't actually until we found our neurologist out of Rochester is when we got really connected with people and kind of knew, okay, this person can help us. And so we reached out to a couple of different advocates to, you know, get direction and help educate others or the teachers or, you know, give us some guidance. So that's how it kind of worked out. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I was doing some research and I came across where they explained, I think I'm pronouncing it right. Coprolalia. Is that right? What is it?
Coprolalia.
Tim, stop trying. Just let
But here's the problem here's what us as society, right? You hear about some of the Tourette's and you automatically think of somebody screaming out some profanity or something, which is that coprolalia. And come to find out, that's only like 10 to 15% of all cases. And that is not what Tourette's is. Yet, that's what the media and everybody makes people think Tourette's is. You know, you go to whatever. That's when I first learned about somebody with Tourette's, I thought, I don't know where it came from or where I learned it, but I immediately thought, oh, it's somebody who like just swears for no given reason. They just drop a profanity or some sort of socially unacceptable phrase or whatever. You know, what do you guys, can you guys fill us in a little more on that?
So I used to swear, and going to a Catholic school was not the best place to swear. Right. It was highly frowned upon by the nuns. They definitely did not like it, but I like was able to train myself. So I would say the F word, but I would train myself to say fork instead of fill right. in the blank.
Yeah.
Instead of what?
Uh-huh. I was able to, like, train myself, so I would scream fork instead of
the other.
That. Yeah. But I was able to, like, hold in my tics in school most of the time, so I wasn't ticking like I was at home.
So I've heard you talk about holding in your tics before. It's better to just let them out, right?
Absolutely. Some points, like, yeah, have to hold it in. Like, if I'm in a patient's room, mm-hmm. I try to hold it in. But sometimes it has to come out. Like, one way or another, it's going to come out.
Right.
The more you hold it in, the more extreme it's going to be when you let them out.
David used to suppress all day in school. And then he would come home, as he said, and he would scream. For hours, like about 2 hours afterwards. And then he would also get migraine headaches and his neck would hurt because he had this horrible head shaking tic for a very long time. So between the suppression, causing the migraine and the screaming, it also caused, you know, the neck to hurt and the migraine and all. It's just crazy, you know. So you're better off getting that tick out.
Have any of you ever, I'm going to say used it to your advantage, but maybe lost your cool on mom or dad and then were like, oh,
David.
Sorry.
Listen, I have never.
I could see David
smiling.
Say it, okay? I don't have a problem swearing. I just do it.
No, they have never. We have never allowed them to use any of their Tourette's as any reason for or weakness on their part. You know, that's no excuse in our house just because you have Tourette syndrome. So. And misbehavior, yeah, no, they couldn't get away with that either. So,
well, I'm just saying, disguise it a little bit and just say that's what it was.
Oh yeah, no.
I'm looking at David right now, and I know he did it.
The teachers, maybe. My parents, no.
Hey, yeah. Whatever it takes, man.
If you had to help somebody right now, somebody who's just finding this out about themselves, somebody who is kind of like David, you know, like Chris, like you said, like it took that drive from Pennsylvania to really say, oh, like, wow, yeah, we have to have this addressed. If you guys had to give advice to somebody who's going through that moment right now and you're however many years ahead of that moment, you're 20 years ahead of that moment, 15 years ahead of where they are right now, is there any advice you could give them? I know I'm kind of putting you guys on the spot, but is there any advice you'd give them?
I would say don't be afraid of the outcome. Don't think of the unexpected. There's a lot worse things out in the world than having Tourette syndrome. You're alive. You're healthy. There's tons of things that come to mind that are a lot worse than Tourette's. So having Tourette's is just, yes, it is a bump in the road, but you get through it.
Love it.
That's great. Well, thank you guys for coming on. Is there anything, anything else you guys want to say about the Tourette Awareness Month? Anything that you want to throw out there?
Children.
No? Can you guys all tick together at once?
I do not think you want that, Tim, because it will not stop.
I love you guys. I think it's amazing that you guys support each other. And I think just bringing awareness to everybody is key. And I like the fact that you all have that confidence. Like, you know what? We live with it, and we wouldn't want it any other way. And I think that's what I heard you say, Jill. And then, you know, David, you're like, I don't care what people think. That's amazing. And I think people... we're finding out a lot about the world, and I think we're all realizing that we need to be better humans. Humanity has to be a thing, and we all have to realize that we're all different in our own different ways, yet we're all the same, no matter what we're doing or dealing with. And this is just another example. I'm glad you guys shared with us about Tourette syndrome. Like I said, I don't know much about it, so any awareness is knowledge for me. I love it.
Yeah, appreciate you guys taking the time to educate us, educate everybody listening, and, you know, be a part of this. And I know you guys do more than just this. Like, Jill, I remember times where you were on the news doing things, and I know that you guys, you know, you do the camps and such. So the fact that you guys are out there, you know, David's in the ring, you know, with his Twitch tattoo across the back.
I love it.
You know, just, I don't want to say embracing it, but like, hey, this is me, this is who I am. And you guys educate. So thank you guys for that and for being who you are.
It's amazing. You know, in case listeners don't know, David Ferenczi, Dylan Ferenczi are both fighters. Jillian Ferenczi is a karate instructor and a nurse. And it's amazing, like, when we go to the fights and David takes the ring, everybody starts screaming Twitch, Twitch, Twitch. We all know why his name's Twitch. And it's because of this, because it's near and dear to his heart, and he's, you know, proud of who he is. And it's amazing. So, and I got to say, Chris and Jim, amazing parents raising these kids, and just all of them have such great outlooks on life and on what they're doing. And they're achievers, and that comes from parenting. So kudos to you guys. But man, keep doing what you're doing, guys. Amazing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
You bet. All right, Paul, I'm going to let you lead us out.
Perfect. Thanks, guys. As always, we will end the show with just a friendly reminder, and it's maybe more prevalent now than it ever has been, on how quickly your life can change and how quickly you can go from having it be one way to it being completely different. So live life to the fullest. Don't take anything for granted. I mean, not for nothing, but we went from being so stressed out about COVID-19 and the shutdowns and the homeschooling to right into where we are now. Had we known that, COVID wouldn't have seemed so bad, right? So don't take life for granted. Don't take anything for granted. Live life to the fullest and enjoy every day.